Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 170. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And we're talking about all the new movies. I actually have not gotten to see some of these, but Chris has. So I'm going to start off with the sequel to Unfriended, which is called, what is it called? Like
Dark Web. Yeah.
Okay. But I guess as part of that review or conversation, you just watched the first one for the first time too, right?
Yeah.
So what do you think?
The first one's okay. It's probably better than it has any right to be. So it's a, I guess it is an R-rated film. Yeah. It didn't seem like it watching it. I mean, the kind of the kills, I guess if you can call on them, they're a little tame. It was an interesting kind of experiment, I think. It was okay.
I remember liking it more than, like, it seemed like everyone hated the movie or like made fun of it, or I think a lot of people judged it without even seeing it.
Yeah, I think like they looked at it and it's like, oh, the whole movie is just a Skype screen. Well, like, kind of, but not really. And like, yes, it is. It all does take place on a computer screen, but there's other stuff going on. They zoom in on things, and there is a story throughout the whole thing, you know, that ties into this.
Is Unfriended the movie where, like, just, you know, it's all taking place on the screen, but you can see people like having side conversations and shit. Like doing like DMs and stuff to each other.
Yeah. So like, it all takes place from the perspective of this girl Blair, who is, I guess she's the primary character, and you're seeing everything from her screen, and she's like DMing her boyfriend and DMing another friend, and
yeah,
so like there's conversations like text boxes that are popping up, and you're getting stuff that way too.
Yeah, like, and I remember thinking like the movie was like kind of clever, like the way it was like using that, and like, you know, certain friends would know one thing and other people didn't because they weren't in on the conversation, but we're seeing it all on the same, you know, computer screen basically.
Yeah, that, and I also thought that was like, it was very clever in the way it handled it. And, as an experimental piece of horror, I think it does a pretty good job.
Yeah. Like, I'm not sitting here saying it was like an amazing movie, but I enjoyed the first one.
Yeah. So, it was okay. And I actually was like, you know what? I could go for another one.
Yeah.
Of those, you know, similar type thing. What should be noted, and I guess spoilers for a 4-year-old movie, but Unfriended does have a supernatural element to it. Where like the whole premise is that, you know, they're being, I guess, trolled or taunted by somebody who is dead. And it turns out that at the end, like the computer screen is shut by the ghost of this person. So there is like a supernatural element to that film. Dark Web throws that all out. Like, there is a supernatural element. The premise is that the main character, what the hell is his name? Matthias. He picks up a computer at like a cafe that has just kind of been sitting in the lost and found, and he, you know, because he needs a new computer for whatever he's working on, and he unearths that the hard drive on this is full, and it's full of what looks like snuff film type material, like people being killed, people being kidnapped, and there's a portal to the dark web, and like a literal portal where you get in a virtual canoe. And you go down a tunnel, like Doom style. It's pretty corny, but it's this is like the loading screen to get into this dark, off the internet kind of
little back alley, like,
yeah, like a back alley internet, like where people deal in shady shit, like murder and you know, arms dealing and stuff like that. And, yeah. These people are like expert hackers, and turns out they're playing a game kind of Hostel-ish, if you remember kind of the premise of Hostel, where like rich people bid on a chance to torture people. Well, in this, it looks like rich people or these like whoever these are, these sick perverted fucks, or they're bidding on a basically for a homemade snuff film to be made. And they get to pick the victim based on who this person auditions, and then they tell them what they want done to these people. And the guy who left his computer, he is one of these guys, and he's like, "Hey, I know that you have my computer, and like, you got to give it back because like bad shit's going to happen." And then, so he starts threatening other people in the group, and it kind of plays out very similar to Unfriended, where like, as it goes on, people are getting offed. But this one is a little bit weaker in that, like, I thought the kills in the first Unfriended were maybe a touch tame.
Yeah.
But there are some like pretty cool scenes and cuts of gore and stuff, and in this, like, a lot of the kills are kind of off screen and not like they're not up to kind of what you want out of a film like this, where your whole attention is being drawn to these people on the screen. Like, if they're gonna die, they shouldn't die off screen, and then like you just see a pool of blood or something like that. Like, it seemed like they copped out a little bit. In the way they handled it, and ultimately, like, the twist in it isn't very good. They said they got rid of the supernatural element, which is fine because you can do horror in the real world, and it doesn't have to be ghosts. But in this, it just didn't quite click. It's okay. I still think, like, for, you know, an 80-minute movie or whatever it is, it's certainly fine. But I wouldn't rush out to see it.
Okay. Is it the same gimmick as the first one, where it's like all from a computer screen?
Yep. Yeah,
okay.
It all takes place on a screen on like a Skype chat type thing. And there are like side conversations going back and forth, and they do a little bit more this time where one of the people goes mobile, so she is talking via her phone on Skype, so she's moving around in the world, where most of the other people are just kind of like stuck in front of their computer screen. And that does make it a little bit interesting and a little bit tense in how things are handling and when she loses connection and, you know, bouncing back and forth and such. But not quite as good as the first one. Same gimmick. I do think that them waiting 4 years was probably a good idea, although I don't think it did particularly well at the box office.
I don't think it probably has to do that well.
Yeah. No, it can't be. It can't be expensive to have made at all. See, it's already like number 9, but it only cost $1 million to make. They already made $5 million on it. They made their money. Like,
wow, the first one, same budget, it made $64 million.
Wow,
that's surprising. I wouldn't have thought it would have made that much. Crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, like, obviously, that one connected in a way that this one just isn't quite doing, and I don't think it's as good either. So,
That's too bad. I heard some positive buzz like early on, like months ago, but
it's not bad. It's just like I don't think it's as good as the first one, and I certainly don't think you should be rushing out to see it. So,
okay, well, that's Unfriended Dark Web. How would you rate this series?
Like 3 straight down. It's okay. They're fine. They're, in terms of like watching a horror film, they're fine. I think in terms of like experimental filmmaking and trying something different, they're really kind of cool. Because you don't see a film kind of done this way. And it has a different structure to it because of the way they're doing everything in front of a computer. So I think that's cool. But like overall, I think they're probably just like middle of the road.
All right. And I guess you got to see the other like new movie in theaters this week, which was Equalizer 2.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was an Equalizer 1.
Really? You didn't know? I think you might like it. The first one is actually it's pretty cool. Denzel Washington, directed by Antoine Fuqua.
Yeah, it looks like he did both of them, huh?
Yeah. The first one has this kind of like feeling like where obviously Denzel Washington is like he is a badass dude in these movies, but in the first one he's just like working at Home Depot. He's just like a regular dude, right? And
oh yeah, I remember seeing a trailer for that.
Yeah, so like he's just a regular dude, and he gets caught up in he ends up like rescuing a hooker or something from a bad situation, and then going and taking out the pimps and angering the Russian mob. And there's some really cool action in The Equalizer, and I think it's a decent film, right? Like, I think it's fun. Like, it's nothing like super special, but
yeah,
it's like a cool, like you don't get those types of action movies anymore. Very reminiscent of like Stallone or those types of like late 80s, early 90s type action movies. Equalizer 2, Fuqua and Denzel back again. He is so, you know, in the last one, he was like this Home Depot kind of clerk or whatever. This one starts off with him on his way to Turkey. So instantly has a different vibe. Like the other one was like, oh, this guy who is, he's just trying to keep to himself.
Gets like sucked into this.
Yeah. Obviously he has a past and he's well equipped to handle it, but he didn't want any of this. He was like, it immediately starts off with him looking for a dude. And this guy has kidnapped his daughter from the U.S. Just basically to hurt his ex-wife. And Denzel goes after the kid to bring her back. And so it starts off cool, like fight sequence on a train. The kid ends up getting reunited, and then it jumps back, like it tones everything down and spins it back. And he is just a Lyft driver this time around. Like, it's like you've already set off that he's like some globe trotting super fucking ninja. You're going to try and play off like the same premise again, that he's just like a dude. And they don't. he is just a dude. You get more information on his backstory, and I mean, I guess that's cool. But really, what you want is to see Denzel fucking shit up, and he does. But I think like the added exposition here doesn't really work. It's just not as engaging. There's too many storylines going on. He's like trying to work with too many people at once, where the first one was a very simple. Like, this is what I'm doing. This has him working like with like a Jew from the Holocaust. Like, him and his sister were separated, so he's trying to like reunite them, and he's trying to deal with this kid who like is getting mixed up in drugs and gangs, but he just like he really just wants to be an artist, so he's trying to keep him on the right track. And then there's this overarching line where Denzel's friend, the only person that knows that his character is still alive, she gets murdered and he gets involved, and so he ends up like hunting down the people that killed her. And it's a little bit all over the place. The action's not quite as good. Denzel's still fucking like, he's fun to watch. Yeah. He's just a great fucking actor, tons of charisma, excellent screen presence, and like you're kind of just drawn in by anything that he's playing, where he gives like his all to it, and he does here. It's just, I don't know, did you ever see was it Man on Fire, which was like the Tony Scott movie?
I saw part of it probably, and I'm aware that like I think it's well liked, right?
Yeah, it's okay. I think like I don't think it's great, but it's like the reason that it's anybody thinks anything of it is because of Denzel. Like he just has that presence, and like he's able to elevate mediocre material, and that's what he does here. Like it's I think you get a lesser actor in this one. Nobody goes to see it. It's direct to video. And two, it's probably not anywhere near as good because you don't have somebody that can carry a movie that's as kind of ridiculous as this is. But yeah. It's fun enough, but not quite as much fun as the first one. That was my experience with sequels this week. Not quite as good as the first one. I'd give this a 3 as well. Higher recommendation than Dark Web, but... not by much, and honestly, there's probably a better action movie coming out this week that you.
Yeah. You know what's funny is, you know, I remember seeing the trailer for Equalizer 2, and like the only thing about it that like was selling me on it was I was like, well, it's Denzel being badass, so like it could be okay,
right?
Just because of that, so. But I do, now that you mention it, like, I do remember seeing the trailer for that first one, and I think I might give that one a watch, because...
That one's fun.
I like the idea of, like, just, like, a regular dude, or someone at least trying to be a regular dude.
Yeah.
Getting sucked into some shit. Alright, well, that's Equalizer 2. Maybe if I like the first one, I'll go see the second one. I mean, I do have the, you know, the Stubbs list thing, so... We'll see, but...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to see either of those movies this week. I went to go see the film you reviewed last week. Sorry to bother you.
Mm-hmm.
So I you know, and one of the reasons I didn't get to see either of those other movies is because I went to go see Sorry to Bother You twice.
Nice. So, you liked it, evidently.
Yeah, as you can tell, I was a pretty big fan of the movie. Yeah, I loved it, dude. You know, everything that you said about it last week, you know, I agree with you. You know, you weren't lying. It was a great movie. I think I liked it even more. It kind of speaks right to, like, my sort of politics. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll just give my thoughts on it before getting into spoilers. I love how offbeat the movie is. I love the cast performances, the look of the movie. It's funny, but it also it has something very, I think, serious to say. It has a very strong message.
Yeah,
I just love it all around. It goes surprising places. You're constantly going to be like surprised by where it goes next. It's not just what the trailer shows. And I don't know if this is considered a spoiler, but I'll just say it. It's strange to see a pro-union movie. They don't make a lot of those. In fact, I can only really think of one that's called Norma Rae, and I think they do mention it somewhere in this movie. But like, that's not what you expect, like, you know, from seeing the trailer, so if people consider that a spoiler, I'm sorry. But we're about to get into like serious spoilers on it. But yeah, I think it's a, you know, it's an awesome debut film. I think it's a pretty funny comedy, but also beyond that, just wildly inventive and just goes places you don't expect, and has something to say about the world that we live in right now that I think is important. So I really loved it, and I'm going to give it 5 stars.
Nice.
We could talk spoilers now, Chris.
Where do you want to start with it?
Let's start with like the big reveal.
Horse people.
Yeah. It's just funny because after I saw the movie, I wanted to do one of those like mock one perfect shot things on Twitter where I was just going to take a shot of BoJack Horseman. I was going to say, sorry to bother you. And I was like, that's too much of a spoiler. And then the next day I saw the BoJack Horseman account be like, hey man, I didn't even get to audition for this movie. But yeah, anyways, it's a surprise, right? It's like a big shock that like comes out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah, because I mean, yes, the film is absurd up to that point, like, but it seems like it's grounded in a reality,
like a kind of like a skewed, like it's kind of like a dystopia, you know? But it's like a dystopia that's like really, really close to how things are right now. Like, and then it just goes like all of a sudden he walks into the wrong through the wrong door. And this guy who's trying to hire him has horse people. And it's basically like the guy that Armie Hammer's playing is kind of like a Jeff Bezos, like, you know, they're kind of like Amazon or something, right?
Yeah.
And his idea is to make literal workhorses, you know, like if we can make half human, half horse hybrids, these guys can, you know, get more production out of the workers. They can work harder and longer and stronger. And he's got this like awesome like claymation video showing it. Was it claymation?
It was something like it. It was definitely like animated in some force, some fashion.
And so, you know, basically he's making horse people because they can work harder and longer than regular people. You know, he would make his workers snort a line of this stuff that would turn them into it.
It's like he's hiring him to basically be like his sales
a false
pitch is like
leader for them.
We want you to be the Martin Luther King of the horse people.
Horse people, yeah.
But like our man too. Like
like he would be you know, Lakeith Stanfield's character, he like breaks it down, you know, real quick. He's like, yeah, so you want me to be like a false leader to these people, but I'm actually like working for you or whatever. Like, and I'm supposed to keep them in line. Right.
Yeah.
Which is just like all this, like, I mean, I love it. It's insane. And I love how the movie goes crazy with it. Like, you know, near the end of the movie, like, he wakes up in the back of like a police truck and the horse people have fucking revolted and they're like running through the streets and fucking killing cops and shit. I'm just like, this is wild. This is crazy. Like, it's nothing that you expect, you know, it's just nothing you could have ever predicted. But at the same time, like, I feel like what happens there and that I think and that reveal is like 100% in line with like the story that Boots Riley was trying to tell, like, or the message that he's trying to say, which is like, they don't care about you. You know, they'll do anything.
Yeah, they will make you into fucking horse people if they think that it'll make them more money.
And like, I don't think it's like, call me crazy if you want. I don't take it as metaphor, dude. Like, they would do that if they could get away with that. And they can make the money.
Oh, sure.
They do it. You know what I mean? They don't. Yeah, that's like, the thing. Corporations do not care. They're not meant to care.
Right. Like, their sole purpose is to make as much money for their shareholders as possible. Like,
yeah.
That is it. Like, so if there's a way to do it, they will do it. The reality is if there was science and technology that could make people into horse people and they were more efficient and like were able to do more work, yes, they probably fucking would.
Yeah, like if they could talk you into it. And I love, like, another aspect of this movie I love is, and I knew it was going to come down to this near the end, is like somehow, like, whatever's going on in this power call area upstairs would relate to the worry-free thing that's like happening in the background of this world.
Yeah.
And that's like basically, you know, you could sign a contract with this company and they'll provide you, you know, the things you need, like food, you know, shelter, all these things for life, but that's your like pay, right? And like they, you know, you're like stacked in these like bunk beds with other people and shit and you're eating slop.
Yeah, it looks like a fucking concentration camp, like, but just with like nicer mattresses.
I mean, I love how packed full of ideas this movie is. Like, you just going to see it a second time, like I'm seeing all these things, like just little things in the background, the way that the political activists are vandalizing all the signs in the background, just little stupid things like his girlfriend, played by Tessa Thompson, who I love in this, like she's standing in front like of a business twirling a sign, and it's a sign that says signs advertising a place that sells signs, like, yeah, just like little things like that. I'm just like, it's like a wonderful touch. But yeah, I don't know, like there's so many things you could talk about in this. Well, one scene that we talked about last week, it was the rap scene where, yeah, you're like, I don't know if I feel comfortable like laughing about this. So I saw it two times, and like the first time I saw it, it was like a Friday afternoon at like 4 o'clock, and it was me, one other guy, and two girls in the theater. And the second time was like the theater was maybe a third full. So like neither time, it was never like the crowd was like going wild laughing at it.
Right.
There was definitely more uncomfortable laughter when I saw it on Saturday night at 7 p.m. I love like the message behind that scene, like what that scene is about, though. Like, yeah, first of all, he's like, I can't rap, dude. I'm telling you, yes, he totally fucking can't. And so then he just starts saying the N-word to this crowd of white people, and they fucking eat it up. And of course, they love it even more because that allows them to say the N-word, you know?
Yeah. It's like, now I'm singing along. Like,
and it's like, it's funny because, like, going into the movie, like, based on just the trailer, I kind of thought that the movie would be more about race, and, like, that would be, like, you know, what it was about. And, like, that's in there. That's definitely part of it. Like that scene is definitely, you know, very pointed commentary.
Yeah.
But the overall point of it is just, like, the people at the bottom need to band together and form unions so that they don't get turned into fucking horse people.
I agree, and, like, I think I said that last week, like, it is not a movie that like is specifically about race. Like, it is about class warfare, really. Like, and the top 1% fucking having everything and everybody else kind of having to fight for the scraps. And yeah, like there is the that ridiculous rap scene where he is just up there going off in front of you know, a group of like rich white people that are just like, yeah, like getting all behind it. He's not, it's terrible. It's a terrible performance.
And beyond the whole like N-word aspect of it, just the notion that, you know, he's a black guy. So
yeah, and everybody can rap. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Like all black people can rap. All black people can play basketball. Like, he's like, dude, like I'm borderline white. Like he's like, I think he says it at one point, like, he's like, I'm like, or I think Tessa Thompson basically says, like, you're basically a white dude, like, with his sweaters and shit, like, and it's pretty, like, pointed in its commentary on things, and, but I like how it's not just, like, this isn't just a movie about race, and, like, that would be perfectly fine to make one,
yeah,
as well, but think like it just has a deeper meaning for all people that like really they should get behind.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like, again, like I said, it's of course agreeing with my politics, but whatever, I think it's stuff that's important to be said in these times. And yeah, I don't know, dude, I just fucking loved it all around, like, and just so many little things, like the look of it. I love the way, like, Lakeith Stanfield is kind of like hunched over through the whole movie, like he's just like beaten down.
Yeah.
I like the soundtrack, like the music in it. I love, oh yeah, I almost forgot, like the very ending. That's the part where when I saw it on Saturday night, like right as it cut to, you know, it just says sorry to bother you or whatever, everyone was just like, what the fuck? Like, what? Like, there's so many people in the audience went, what the hell did I just see? And that was, so at the very end, you know, everything's all like happy again, and, you know, he's like decided that he's gonna go back to be with his friends and just be part of the union. He's going in this like new garage newly like decked out garage with his girlfriend, and he goes to close the garage door, and he like hits his, you know, hits his nose or whatever. He's like, and he like turns and like looks at the screen, and his fucking, he's turning into a horse.
Yeah, his nostrils are flared out.
Yeah. So I guess the cocaine that he was given earlier was the stuff.
Oh yeah, that definitely seems that way. And did you stick around like where he invades the house?
It's like a half second later. Yeah. Like it does a final scene after where they're storming into Armie Hammer's place, and he's like, he's at the gate talking to the camera. He's like, "Sorry to bother you. We're coming in." It's just like, what's the final shot? It's like them breaking down the door and coming in. He's like, "Wah!" I was just like, dude, you won't see. I might see a movie like later this year that I love more than Sorry to Bother You. I kind of doubt it, but you won't see anything that's that crazy and just like original, where you're just like, I've never seen that before. Like, what the fuck was that? And it had something to say on top of it. Like, so yeah, I really fucking dug this movie.
Yeah. One thing that I read in a review, and the lady writing it basically said, like, it seemed like Boots Riley like was like, I don't know if I'm ever gonna get to make another fucking movie.
Yeah.
Sort every fucking idea I have in here, and like we're just gonna go with it. And I kind of like that about it. Like, there's no holding back. There's just like, I'm going balls to the wall all the way through. Like, this is gonna be as fucking nutso as possible, because I may never get another chance at this. So.
Yeah, a lot of critics like kind of picked up on that, and I agree. It feels like that, but like you, I kind of love it more because of that. Like,
oh yeah,
like he's just putting everything in there. You know, some of it, yeah, you could point to things like a lot of people will point to like the love triangle between, you know, him and his girlfriend and Steve Yeun. Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't kind of really go anywhere, but it's also not bad. Like, the scenes are not poorly written when they're happening and stuff. Like, I bought what was going on. And, you know, it kind of speaks to, like, what's happening with him. Like, the way he's being a scab and crossing the line so that you get ahead or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to say except that, yeah, there's I'm sure we're forgetting tons of little things in this that happen. I just love, too, like, there's a whole sense, too, throughout the movie that like there's this special better world for people who have access. Like, just like I remember the part when you're like sitting at the bar and Danny Glover's like, "No, give me the good shit," and she like takes like opens a door on one of the bottles sitting there and pulls out a little bottle that's hidden inside the bottle that has the good booze in it. And it's just like you said, it's just like he threw everything he could think of into this, but it's all kind of going towards like, you know, a snapshot of what's happening in the world now, and also just like how it feels right now. You know, like, I don't know, man. I loved it. I'll stop gushing. But yeah, it's fun to finally like talk with someone else about it. Like, cause yeah, that fucking twist is wild, but I think it's totally earned, and like,
yeah,
it makes sense, and it makes the movie. Like, I'll never forget the movie. Like, you always just think that's the movie with the fucking horse people, and they're like, they're like fucking taking over, like they're taking shit back at the end. And it starts off as just like this movie, like nobody's seen in the movie is a guy just getting a job working at a telemarketing place, which is a scene I also love too. Like, he brings in his like employee of the month plaque and his trophy from high school, and it's all fake. And the guy sees right through it, and he's like, dude, we're not mapping the human genome here. I'll fucking hire basically anybody. You got the job. I loved that too. Like, the movie just starts right at the scene where he's getting hired. Like, you know right away what's going on. You have an idea what you think it's going to be about. And it just goes from there. Like, most of the trailer happens in the first 20 minutes of the movie. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah. I'm glad you liked it. Glad you got to see it too, because
yeah,
it's still hard to see. So
I had to drive about 30 miles to go see it at an AMC that didn't have reserve seating, so it's got like the old seating.
Oh,
but they do have an IMAX screen there.
Okay.
So I have a feeling I'm going to be going back there soon to see the new Mission Impossible next week.
Nice.
Finally, like, broke the seal on that series or whatever. I don't know how I had avoided that series for so long, but I finally gave it a shot this week and didn't start with the first two. I started with Mission Impossible 3. And I think that movie alone made me a fan right away. I love, like, and so I've seen 3, 4, and 5 now, right?
Okay.
I feel like I'm ready to go for the new one that's coming out, part 6.
I think we talked off show about this, but yeah, I mean, 3, 4, and 5 kind of all, they're all kind of in like that J.J. Abrams universe, like that he started with 3. 1 and 2 are definitely like separate things, and from what I see, 6 ties everything together. So,
So like 3, 4, and 5 all kind of feel like the same series. Like it feels like a formula that they got down, and that's what they're doing. I mean, it's probably like the first two like feel different, even like they're kind of a different vibe all together. Or...
Well, 2 is just. It's something else entirely. So, I think, you know, it's a product of coming out in 1996. I like it a lot. I think there's some really cool scenes in it, but I don't know. Like, I don't think it matches up as well as Mission Impossible 3 does.
Okay, so yeah, Mission Impossible 3. That's my introduction to this series. And the movie starts off with fucking Tom Cruise is tied to a fucking chair. His wife's tied to another chair. And Philip Seymour Hoffman in fucking God mode is telling him that he's going to fucking kill his wife right in front of him. Count to 10 if he doesn't tell him where the fucking rabbit's foot is. And that's how that movie starts off. And it's just like, bam, 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 bam. I was like, holy fucking shit, dude. This thing's not fucking around. And for like, most of that fucking movie, it feels like it never slows down. Like, that movie is incredible. I think that's one of the best action movies I've ever seen.
Oh, cool.
Like, the sense of pacing in part 3 is, like, it just never kind of, like, yeah, it slows down here and there to explain the next thing that's going to happen. And that's kind of the formula for the whole series going along. But I just feel like there's just this sort of, like, you know, it's being propelled forward in 3 so well. I think that part 3 has like a very simple and like personal story. He's trying to stop this bad guy and get this lucky or whatever fuck rabbit's foot. He catches the bad guy and the bad guy's like, you done fucked up. And then like, he just like rains down fucking hellfire on him. Like they're like driving down a bridge and all of a sudden his fucking boys like shoot the fucking bridge apart and just come grab him. And then he abducts dude's wife and is getting payback. Like it's so simple, you know what I mean? Like,
right
to the point where it's like they never even explain what the fuck the thing is. And I remember that, like near the end of the film, I'm like, I don't think they ever said what the rabbit's foot is. It looks like it's like a nuclear bomb or something. But he even says it near the end, like, were you going to tell me what the hell you know that thing was? And they're like, nope. And that's how the movie ends. I don't know, dude. I really love part 3. I think maybe some of it is Philip Seymour Hoffman. I love that actor. You know, that guy was never not good, you know?
Right, right.
I enjoyed them all, but I think that's easily my favorite one. I think that Ghost Protocol, the next one, has some, like, really amazing scenes. Like, that part where he's, like, running around the side of a building. That shit was fucking great. Like, that whole part, that whole sequence in like Dubai or whatever.
Yeah.
It was awesome. But that one did, like, the story. I think that one has, like, the weakest story out of all of them.
Out of those three, I agree with that one.
Because it's just, like, the story in that one is basically there's a guy with a fucking briefcase. And we have to get him. I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about 3. But the villain in part 4 is like, he just wants to set off a nuclear bomb. He doesn't say anything. Like, the dude barely says anything through the whole movie. Like, just like boring and no personality villain. When you just had Philip Seymour Hoffman and the one before that, you know what I mean?
Right.
I was listening to a podcast today about it, and I guess that they like shot a lot of the action scenes and like came up with all of that before the story. So I mean, that explains a lot about Ghost Protocol. I know some people like really, really love that one, and it's their, like, in fact, the podcast I was listening to today, they were saying it's their favorite one. That was my least favorite one. I don't know about you. Out of those three.
Out of those three, yeah, that's my least favorite, yeah.
Okay. Rogue Nation, I really liked. Like, I thought the story was, like, way more compelling. I don't know that it had, you know, scenes as cool as Ghost Protocol, like, where he's running on the side of the building. Like, they all have awesome, amazing action sequences, though, you know?
And what's crazy about them is that, for the most part, Tom Cruise fucking does them.
I know, that's the part, too, that, like, really... You know, and I don't know, you know, where the line is, but you know that, like, if it's him on the side of a building or something, like, yeah, he's probably doing it.
Yeah, that's him. Like, and that, he was like, on that side of the plane.
Yeah, like, that was him on the side of the plane, right? That's real?
Yep.
But, all right, but was that him really jumping into that water thing from really high in Rogue Nation? You know what I'm talking about? That can't be real.
I don't think that was, but that whole shot underwater, which is 6 minutes long, is him. That is him holding his breath the entire time.
That's what I was telling my girlfriend. She's like, no, that's not fucking real. I'm like, no, dude. He fucking really does this shit.
It is one take, one cut of that, and he held his breath. Like, he trained for like quite a while to get that down. And the dude is fucking insane.
I mean, I think that action in these movies is like really technically well done, like amazing, like great action in all of them. But like, part of that is what he's doing.
Yeah.
And then knowing that on top of it makes it kind of cooler, because you're sitting there going, wow, I can't believe he fucking did that. Like, that's fucking nuts, dude. You know? Yeah. I'm like kicking myself for having missed these movies all these years. I'm like, this is one of the best action series I've ever seen, and Part 3 is one of the best action movies I've ever seen. So I'm happy that I did. You know?
Yeah, no, I'm happy you did too. Like that. Yeah. I think it's like a ton of fun series, and 3 is great movie. So
yeah, and even in 3, great sense of humor. I think they like up the humor a little more in 4 and 5.
But they bring Simon Pegg in. Right,
like, He's in three.
Yeah, yes. and he's kind of the tie through 3, 4, and 5, along with Ving Rhames, who's been in it since the beginning.
Yeah,
He's
not like annoying at all. Like, he feels like a legit part of the team.
Oh yeah,
in the fifth one, you're just like yeah, he's not gonna do shit like Tom Cruise. He's their tech guy, but he does sometimes have to step up and fucking do shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, he doesn't like. You think Simon Pegg, at least I expect him to come off as, like, kind of goofy. And, like, he is. He's, like, the funnier guy, but he's still, like, a legit, like, he's not, like, a total comic relief. Like, yeah, he's jokey more, but, like,
yeah,
he's not super goofy.
He just brings a little bit of levity, and, like, Ving Rhames plays off of him pretty well. Yeah. And, I mean, Tom Cruise can play off anybody pretty well, so. And Tom Cruise himself can be a pretty funny guy, so...
Yeah, there's, like, a part in, I think it's Ghost Protocol, when he has to go out on the side of the building, where he's, like, just standing there by the window, like, alright, are we really gonna do this? I love when he's like, I can't think of another way. Like, he says it a couple times in a couple of movies, where he's like, I'm trying to think of another way. It seems like we're gonna have to do this crazy shit. I love, too, how, like, they walk you through the plan, you start, and so as the plan's going down, like, you have an idea of the geography, you know what they're trying to do, like, you get what's going on, right? Which, one, as alone is a feat, like, in and of itself. But I love, too, like, in every movie, as the plan is going down, shit fucks up, and they have to, like, improvise and work with less shit to get by. Like, it happens, I think, in all of them. And they're just like, oh, well, we have to come away like around this on the fly. I think I'm just like going all over the place talking about the shit I love about it. But I think my favorite sequence in all of them, all the ones I've seen anyways, is when they make Philip Seymour Hoffman disappear. So like this, it's like this whole extended sequence where they're breaking into this place. They're like making a mask on the fly, stealing his voice on the fly. And then they get him out of there and then like park over a sewer lid, go out of the car through the bottom of the car into the sewers, and then blow up the car to make it look like Philip Seymour Hoffman died. Like that whole fucking part, I was just like, that's when I was just like, all right, I guess I'm a fan of the series now. That's fucking great. but yeah, that's my little gushing about the Mission Impossible series. I'm happy I checked it out. I take it you're like a big fan of the series, right?
I really like the series. I'm going to see it tomorrow, so
I should have listened to you sooner, but I'm glad I finally did. Yeah, I'm going to be going probably Saturday night or Sunday, but hopefully Saturday night to IMAX to see that shit.
Nice.
It's not going to be like a full on IMAX, but
yeah, I don't think mine is either. Like when we have two full on IMAXs, but you have to drive like an hour to get there. But I do have like an IMAX equipped theater.
Yeah.
Near me.
So we'll have that for next week. I'm fucking super stoked for it.
Nice.
And other stuff too.
Yeah, I'm gonna try. I already have tickets to see Teen Titans Go.
Oh yeah, I might go
see the movies. So I'll see both new movies coming out this week.
Cool, cool. So I look forward to that and come back next week.
Movie dudes.